This week's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Heavy Play. If you're interested in getting some innovative curved sleeves, or even trying out their Equip Mag system that connects your playmat, deck box, and dice box together with high-quality magnets, check out HeavyPlay.com. Use the code DARKDEPTHS10 for 10% off your order. Again, thank you to our friends over at HeavyPlay.com. Enjoy the show. Thank you to our friends over at Magnolia Gaming, a leading supplier for all things TCG. If you're looking for a place to pick up cards for your next big event, or maybe you just want to do a draft with the new set with your best friends, use MagnoliaGames.com to pick up everything you need from Magic the Gathering, Flesh and Blood, Lorcana, and more. They have an excellent buy list to help you trade those extra modern cards for your first dual land, or maybe that old Angus McKenzie commander deck collecting dust can be traded in for the last cards you need for your collection. And be on the lookout for Magnolia Games at your next large regional event. Use our affiliate code to help support the Dark Depths podcast. Again, go to MagnoliaGames.com and tell them the Dark Depths podcast sent you. All right, enjoy the show. Podcast, we go to first in the modern and legacy format. I'm one of your hosts, Billy McKenzie, and with me, the splitter of seconds himself, Michael Matheson. How are you?
I am decidedly okay. How are you?
I'll take okay. Decidedly okay is a victory. It could be decidedly bad, so that's good. I'm personally decidedly happy. We're taking a break out of April Fool's Day to go and make a birthday cake for my wife, but we are recording, so I'm hanging out with you on a day off, which is nice. I mean, what could be better?
Being at a Magic tournament?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
I do like Magic tournaments.
I mean, we were at Magic tournaments this weekend, though. It's not like we didn't get to play any Magic.
Well, you weren't really at a Magic tournament.
I was there. I walked in the door at the same event you were at.
I mean, you weren't there when the event started, so you weren't at a Magic event. I was at a Magic event.
You were.
I top-4'd a Magic event.
You did.
You were not at a Magic event.
No. How many people were at that event, by the way?
I don't know. Not very many.
Okay.
Yeah, my top-4 is not particularly impressive. I don't know. On Twitter, I think I just refer to it as, like, feels like I just won FNM.
Yeah. That's fitting. But it's cool, though, that it's a new store on the draw, I believe, in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. So if you're up that way, you know, hang out, tell the owner we sent you. He will look at you blankly, but he is a cool store, though. They luckily have a good selection. They've only been open for a couple of months now, so it's always good to see, it's good to see friends doing things, but it's also good to see, you know, new stores popping up in our area. So I always like to try to, you know, give them some love. Especially if you're local.
Yeah. He does have quite a good selection, which is nice. So I was able to spend some of my store credit, banked a little bit for later. Also, cool about that event, I beat Doomsday with Depths for the first time ever.
Oh, wow. Jeez. Yeah, I mean, was it like, did they just, like, miss, or did you just, like, run them over? Like, that doesn't typically happen in my experience.
I don't think my opponent had ever registered the deck for a Hop RAL event. He killed me game one, game two. He just, like, forced a few of my things. And then I was like, oh, he has no cards. I'm going to wasteland him. And then in game three, he Doomsdayed. And I think he was trying to figure out what to play around. And I waited for 3 minutes. And then I was like, dude, you got to make a pile. And then he made the wrong pile. And then I wastelanded him, and he died.
I mean, I'm happy you won, obviously. How long do you normally let people Doomsday pile for? Because I feel like 3 minutes is a long time.
Dude, I clearly have no clue. I took this to Twitter. So if you are, I mean, you know, it's been up for a couple days, so maybe some other people have already seen this. But yeah, I definitely asked on Twitter, how long do you give? And I've gotten such a wide range of answers after kind of reading them and getting some responses from, like, people I kind of know who play the deck or whatever. I'm thinking around 2 minutes is my line. I think 2 minutes sounds about right. A number of people said 3 minutes is the sweet spot. I felt like 3 minutes was a long time. But I think somewhere in that 2 to 3 range is good. I got a wide variety of answers. And I would kind of like to explain how I sifted through them to get to 2 to 3, but I'm curious actually what you think the answer is.
I think the answer is 2. I think 2 is the time where I'm like, I cannot be mad. This is just how this card goes. You're, you know, putting stuff away. You're searching through your deck. I get it. 2 minutes, it's fine. I think 3 minutes is the point where it's kind of like that minute from 2:00 to 3:00 is that point where it's kind of like, I am prepared to call a judge. I'm looking around. I'm making sure that the judge is like can see me and I say I'm going to try to make eye contact with them so this can move on quickly from here. But like, if you took 2 minutes and 40 seconds, I'd be slightly annoyed, but it'd be fine. It's fine. 3 minutes is too long. I think I really do think 2 is like the sweet spot. I think there's a lot of people, and this is speaking strictly in paper. I think online it's a different story. If you want to take 10 minutes, you take 10 minutes, live your life. Because the chess clock, right? But
I mean, please don't.
I mean, yeah, please still don't. But like, you know, you can see it on Moto where people, they have the pile in like 20 seconds, right? But all the cards are sorted for you. It's not like you have to go find things. And I understand the, okay, I know I have a cavern in this deck somewhere. Where is it? Oh gosh. Oh, it's in my graveyard, right? You milled it, right? Okay, cool. And, like, I understand all of that. That's totally fine. So on Moto, the fact that it takes you, you know, a minute tops to resolve a lot of Doomsdays, it makes a lot of sense. Having to organize your cards well enough where you can make sure you have the cards you need for the pile you want to make, you can assess the board, you should be able to have it, but also, like, the assessment shouldn't be a post-Doomsday thing, that should be a pre-Doomsday thing, because if you can't win with the Doomsday pile, like, you don't have an idea about how you would win with the Doomsday pile, I don't think you should be casting Doomsday. And this is something maybe, like, you know, Samantha Murphy has a different opinion on, but I feel like you should be having a evolving plan as you're playing the deck. So when you cast the Doomsday and they're like, yeah, I guess it resolves, you're like, oh, cool, and then just get the cards you want. Maybe there's a better line, you know, maybe you pick line that's like a 96 instead of the line that's a 98, and you switch it up a little bit, like, that's fine, but, like, I am imagining most of those scenarios are very close to each other where it's not like a huge difference and a huge amount of time to alter from one plan to the next. So again, about 2 minutes, I think. 2 minutes is like the perfect time. If you take 3 minutes, I will not be super upset.
Yeah. So one of those things that I was wondering about, you kind of touched on, where it's like, I also kind of feel like they should have a plan before they cast Doomsday, but also, you know, I don't know what percentage of the time people are just casting their Doomsday with the expectation that it gets countered, or, you know, maybe they cast it and they don't know what their plan is yet, but, like, you can almost always construct a Doomsday pile that wins, so their thought is just, I will figure it out as I go, or maybe looking at the cards will help me figure it out. So I'm just, it's really awkward. But yeah, I think 2 to 3 minutes, a few people compared it to, you're searching for 5 cards. How long do you get to search for an individual card? If you take 30 seconds per card and you do that 5 times. And I think that is a somewhat reasonable way to approach it. Although, again, if you go into it with a plan, it shouldn't take that long. I found a lot of Doomsday players were saying that they thought it should be somewhere in like the 2-ish, 2 to 3 minute range. And those are Doomsday players that I respect quite a bit. So I think if they're saying that's the amount of time needed, like, they have done this enough where they know. And some of them even said, like, when situations are tough, I go beyond that, but, like, my opponent shouldn't necessarily let me. And I was getting a lot of people who were giving way more time, and they were saying things like, oh, I just want it to be a good game, or, like, oh, my opponent's been playing reasonably, so I'll cut them a break. And I think all of that is kind of nonsense. Like, the rules are kind of, you just have to play at a reasonable pace the whole time. The rules don't say anything about, like, hey, this card is complicated, so you get extra time. And especially the argument where it's like, this turn is going to make or break the game. So I get giving them a few extra seconds, but like, if you're telling me this is going to make or break the game, and then you get an extra 5 minutes, like that doesn't work for me. I want an extra 5 minutes on my complicated turns too then. And nobody's going to give that to me, right? And like, just because I register Knight of the Reliquary and not Doomsday or Dark Ritual, like, I don't get to spend as long on my decisions. Like, what is that? I don't know. It's awkward because, like, a lot of what takes so long is dexterity, but also a lot of it is just them thinking. And honestly, I feel like a lot of players, if you give them enough time to think, they will come up with a line that beats basically everything. And yeah, that's cool that the deck can do it, but this tournament is testing that you can do it in a reasonable amount of time, and you're not doing that. So that's kind of where I'm at. But the other thing that's really awkward about it is, even if I'm like, okay, I'm giving this person 2 minutes, then I, you know, if I say you need to make a decision now, and they could just not do that, and then, like, I call a judge, and by the time the judge gets over, maybe they've already figured it out, like, are they even going to get hit with the slow play? So now I'm like, do I just pull out a timer every time it starts? Is that just, like, me looking like a huge jerk if I'm just, like, sitting there, just, like, looking at the watch, like, tapping on it, like, hurry up, you got 30 seconds left, boy. Like,
yeah, it just feels like you're fishing for a penalty at that point, which is like not really the intention. It's like, I don't want you to get hit with flow play. I just want you to make a decision so we can finish and not draw. And we actually, it's funny you brought that up too. We actually had that, you and I actually had that situation happen before where the opposing, the team event, but the opposing team took an uncomfortably long amount of time in a situation where we didn't have that much time. And again, by the time we called a judge, they were like, oh, we came up with our decision. It's like, of course you did. You've had 4 minutes. Like, I'm glad you came up with the decision at this point, but it was still too long.
Yes. And it was infuriating because I'm not going to name names. But when I said, hey, you know, you need to do something. I think I was the one who said it, because then the opponent, who knew I was a judge, just goes, well, Judge Mapson, you know how slow play works. You can raise your hand and call for a judge. And it was just like, okay, I guess we can be like that instead of just being adults. Very frustrating.
Yeah. So, yeah. And again, we ended up losing that game, essentially, more or less from that turn. I mean, I think there were some other things, too. I think we could have taken some other lines. I don't want to say it like comes down to that. But I think the line that they ended up choosing was more or less one of those lines. I don't think I would have found it in my first 5 iterations. Like, it definitely takes a little bit of going down the rabbit hole to figure out exactly, you know, the situation and, you know, what the perfect turn should be for you. And it worked, right? Where I think if they didn't, if they were like, okay, I don't think I have enough time, I think I can win next turn, you can go. And, like, I think the game ends on my turn. So, it's whatever. It's frustrating. But, you know, and this is also still all assuming that you're playing at a reasonable pace the entire game. Like, if you're tossing up, like, you know, 30-second ponders and, you know, you're shuffling for, you know, 20 seconds for every fetch, like, this is going to take a long time. So it really does add up. That's part of the issue that I always have with, you know, playing paper Magic compared to online Magic is just, like, the amount of shuffling that we end up doing. And the fact that we don't have a chess clock, not that I want a chess clock, I also want to make that abundantly clear. I think that would just be way too confusing. But the fact that you can be in a situation where, like, you don't quite realize that you're being taken advantage of until it's, like, too late, I think is something we should try to minimize as much as humanly possible, just for the fun of the game.
Yeah. I think another solution that we should consider is just we could ban Doomsday, and then this doesn't have to come up.
Well, okay, so is Doomsday in your mind as big of a time suck as a KCI or a Synthesized Divining Top or something of that ilk? Like, is that something that you feel like actually, like, in all seriousness, would it at some point potentially warrant some sort of action simply because of the time it would take?
So that's an awkward thing because, I mean, the answer is no, but it's not even that it takes less time necessarily. It's that the match takes less time. Like, the card Doomsday takes probably, well, you know, again, if you have a strong pilot who's doing it in 2 minutes, not that big of a deal. But there's definitely games where it takes the same amount of time as, like, other cards that have been banned for being egregious. And it just doesn't matter because, like, they do it on turn two. So, like, you know, if you tank for 5 minutes on your second turn, like, yeah, that 5 minutes might be too long, but the match is still, like, the game's still going to be done in the first 7 minutes.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so, and that's, like, one of the things that, with the Reanimator, just that too, where, like, I'm gonna tank for like a minute, 2 minutes, and, like, you're like, I'm gonna die, aren't I? And it's like, yeah, you're dead. Oops does a similar thing too, and I guess because of the fact that the deck's trying to end this game quickly, it's actually more okay. I'm not sure if that makes it okay, though. You know what I mean? Like, just because the deck is planning on winning or losing very quickly, that it's okay for it to take more time.
Well, I think it does not make it okay, personally. I know others were disagreeing with me. People were saying, oh, I've never been worried about Doomsday going to time, so therefore they can take as much time as they need. Again, I think that it's nonsense.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I've gone to time with Doomsday a number of times. Just
how?
A lot of times, especially now that their kind of juke is, like, to have a more, like, mid-range grindy plan, like, there's a lot of games where it just, like, devolves into you with, like, a Shieldred. They're gaining life, but you're beating down. They can't attack because you've got a Murktide that is not going to get any larger, or you have a Troll or something like that. But you're, like, slowly losing life, trying to just, like, clock them in the air. Like, I've had games like that end up being something like, 20-something minutes. And this is, like, game two, so now we're tied and going into game three with, like, 10 minutes left. Like, it happens. Not, obviously, ideal, but it is something that can potentially happen a little more often. I don't know. I feel like that's not the normal games, obviously. Like, I do think most of the games are a little faster than that one way or the other, but the games definitely can come down to a crawl. I was going to say a draw, but I guess that's also true. But specifically a crawl here where we're just kind of like eking out advantages and trying to fight for resources. And like, I know you have Cavern and I have Wasteland, so we're just going to awkwardly sit here until, like, you know, we can resolve a Doomsday. It's, I don't know. I've also gone to time with like Storm before. So like, this is just like a thing that tends to happen with me. So.
Maybe you're the problem.
Well, I also tend to play cards that, like, don't play particularly well with Storm and those types of decks. Like, I'm playing, like, the, what's it called? I can't remember, the red enchantment that, like, they roll dice to take damage from non-creature spells.
Maddening Hex,
yeah. I can play effects like that that also take some additional amount of time in planning, so... it doesn't surprise me. It's just kind of part of the game and like counterbalance and things like that. Well, anyways, I don't want to, I guess we've talked enough about Doomsday for a show that's not really even about Doomsday. So we did have the Legacy Showcase qualifier yesterday, which I know is a cool way, I think, for people who are Legacy specialist specifically to get into the Mox Challenge and hopefully make it onto the Pro Tour and, you know, keep chaining events like that. So, who ended up winning this time?
Andreas Peterson, aka Echo Baronin.
Oh, he's pretty good from what I remember.
Yes. He actually released a video today talking about his win. I haven't had the chance to watch it yet, but I am kind of excited to go in and kind of hear his thoughts, because he had been working on a blue-black deck that was, it wasn't quite Scaminator or, like, Dimir Scam, but it did have, like, Voidwalker main and had some Baleful Strixes, and he's been having some good success with that, and then he switched to, like, four-color beans. Four-color. Everything but red. And I'm definitely curious to go in and hear hear what his thoughts were, what made him switch to this deck, and kind of how it went, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it was not something I was thinking of. I mean, obviously, you know, he can play whatever he wants. But I, looking around, I feel like there's been a lot of decks that have been popping up. So going into the Showcase Challenge, I just wasn't sure where people's minds were going to be at. I know a lot of people there are, I don't want to say deck specialists, but they're people who have been playing a certain deck for a very long time, and it's hard for them to switch. And there's other people who are, you know, actively trying to, you know, pick apart the meta and try to figure out, you know, what are the ratios. I know Mapson's going to be there, so I know there's going to be depth, and I know Billy's going to be there. It's going to be Delver, and you know they do that for everybody. Not that you know you and I have been playing those decks particularly often, super recently, but. I like the idea of being able to see people going through, you know, is this a matter of power or finesse here? And I feel like this actually does a little bit of both, you know, playing this deck in this event. I think it, looking at Echo Baron's deck, you end up having, you know, Bowmasters, which obviously, you know, there's not a lot of blue decks in these events, so that makes sense. I think something like Reanimator ends up being a very popular choice in these events, and Rescaminator has been one of the better decks in the format recently, so Endurance seems like a really good catch-all there. Obviously, just having ubiquitous answers in terms of you know, Leyline Binding, having powerful beaters like Uro, Triumph of St. Catherine, and Murktide Regent, which are really good at racing, especially when you're getting life. Like, there's just a lot to like here, and obviously, it worked out.
Yeah, this deck reminds me of TK's win. But I'm definitely curious what his thought process was. I definitely agree with Endurance being pretty strong, especially not only against Rescaminator, but these things are always heavy with Delver. It's very good against Delver as well.
Also, like the Thabo's Web in the board, sort of a classic. For those who don't remember that card, it is a 2-mana artifact from Invasion. When it comes into play, draw a card. Lands with an activated ability that doesn't produce mana don't untap during the controller's untap step. So it is pretty good at turning things off, whether that is like a Urza Saga, or maybe you're able to tap use a Yavimaya to tap your Maze of It or something like that, right? Then that's not going to untap either. Like, there's a lot to love about Thabo's Web.
It's definitely been a while since I've seen that card.
Yeah, it doesn't show up particularly often. I think I don't know if there's like better things to attack lands. I know I've seen people play like Winter Orb in that spot as well, but I don't like it in these kinds of decks. I think you're doing too much with your mana to be comfortable keeping your lands tapped, but so I think this is a really good fit for this one. Okay, well, obviously, you know, congrats to Andreas. That's a fantastic finish and, you know, obviously a fantastic player, so good work there. McWinsoff coming second place, it looks like, which obviously tough beats, but, you know, he's been there before. He'll get back, I'm sure.
Yeah, also playing a Beanstalk deck, although an 80-card version.
Yeah, which Yorion gives you some room to play some extra stuff, and like looking at this list, it really is kind of a mix up of all the different versions that we've seen. Like, you know, you have a lot of things that were in Echo Baron's deck, but you also are adding things like Solitude. You got Eagles of the North, some Fourth Irelingus, and Life in the Loam, and Witherbloom Command. Like, we're just going all in here, which I do like. I think that's not the worst place to be. I don't think there's a lot of Blood Moon effects right now in the meta. And even if there are, right, you still have like Carpet of Flowers in the main deck. You've got, I think, a basic forest, basic island, basic plains. So you can actually play around those kind of effects pretty cleanly, if need be, of course. So at some point, I will try both of these decks. I've been trying a good variety of decks over the past like couple weeks, so I will probably try to keep that up with these winners. not sure if there's anything else you want to talk about from the Showcase Challenge, or if you just want to start talking about, like, you know, Modern or something.
I don't think there's really anything else in the Showcase Challenge, but there is more I want to touch on in Legacy in general.
Sure.
I want to throw out a plug for our friend Ali and his new website, lordoflegacy.com. Actually, let's double check what the actual website is.
Yeah, lord-of-legacy.com.
Yeah. So
there's a dash between all of them. Not an underscore. Just want to make sure that's clear. Lord-of-legacy.com. You know, I saw this today. I know you have seen this with a little bit more time than I have. So I'm just looking at what this website is kind of for the first time here. Very simple page. We've got this website is built for people who want to geek out on the Magic Online Legacy format. That's us. That's crazy. So what do I do here now that I'm looking at this website? I see some drop downs for, I mean, there's like data and analytics, metagame, high scores, results, competition. What do I do here?
Yeah, so Holly did this thing last year where he wanted to figure out who the best Legacy player for the year was, right? And he found the player who had the most challenge top eights, and then the player who had the highest win percentage over the year, and had them play it out for a trophy and did some coverage. So that's what the competition at the bottom is. So sadly, not something for like me and you. But the rest of this is just really cool to see. He's been a big proponent of Joe Dyer's Legacy collection, and so he's kind of taken that data and put it somewhere where it's a little bit easier and kind of nicer to read, so that he's got a great breakdown under the data analytics section. You can look at what the full metagame looks like, or just like the winner's metagame, with the winner's metagame being like decks that are going X2 or better in challenges. So it's nice, you can really kind of get a view of what people are playing, and then a quick view of like what's doing well. Like if you assume you're going to win the first couple rounds anyways, these are the decks you should be playing against. Mm-hmm. And then the high scores, you can track, like you can see what players' win rates look like and how many top eights they have. The data only goes back, I can't remember offhand how far it goes back.
It's only until July 31st, 2022.
Yes. I tried looking for my name. It didn't show up. 2022, so I don't know. I feel like I had to have played challenges last year. Maybe I didn't. I've been playing a lot less Moto challenges than I was during the height of the pandemic, which is both good because it means I'm going to real events, and sad because I kind of miss those Sunday afternoons, just like hanging out with my dog, making a couple bucks, and then having an excuse to like go out to eat because I didn't have time to cook because I was playing Legacy.
Yeah.
But I think it's cool to have all this information just like so accessible in one place. And I also just think it looks very clean. We talked about a few things that could maybe change to make it an even better experience, because like right now it's definitely better on laptop than it is on mobile. And maybe that's just the way that it will have to stick. But either way, I think it is still a good experience on both, and just very cool to see, and definitely want to give it a shout out.
Yeah, for sure. Again, it's always amazing that we have friends that are so good at like computers, coding, and programming, that they actually get to bring their expertise into, you know, the thing that we all love collectively, Magic. So, very cool. So, if I remember, there are no promises on the show, I will try to put this into the show notes so people can check this out as well. Again, it's lord-of-legacy.com.
Yeah, honestly, like, this is so dumb, but seeing this like laid out like this has me like wanting to play more challenges again and see if I can like, you know, get a good score next year. But I also just know that's not realistic with how much paper Magic I'm.
I mean, again, that is a matter of preference, and the people who do play primarily on Magic Online, like they, I'm trying to phrase this in the nicest way. There are people who choose to play online. There are people who choose to play in paper, and I think they are both groups can be very, very have very high levels and get what they want out of the events without, you know, I feel like there being any kind of backlash for, you know, it's like, you don't play any paper events, you don't play any Magic Online events, like, you know, I think that's cool. If you love playing paper and that camaraderie, then keep doing that.
They both have their perks.
Yeah. For example, in one I can wear no pants and play Magic, in the other one I can, you know, wear no shirt and play Magic. So, you know, it's a win-win.
I'm like pretty sure that's not true.
Okay, fine. In one I can wear no shoes, and then in one I can just like not shower for 2 days and still play Magic. So that's pretty sweet.
You're determined to get us canceled.
It's been a long weekend. Okay.
Billy has the day off work, and I'm sorry, did you have spring break last week?
I did, yeah. So, I've been off since Thursday.
So he's actually got nothing to complain about. And yet here he is, just
here I am,
bringing down the mood.
I think the mood is pretty up there. I think we've been having a lively show. There's been humor, there's been Magic chat, and you know, we've talked about our life, we talked about Legacy, and now we get to talk about Modern. So I don't know what could be better.
Doing this with a different co-host.
So in Modern, I know there's been a lot of sweet things going on. I think, you know, I've been actually playing the format a lot more myself. I've been playing Indomitable Creativity, which is a deck I don't think I've ever actually played before this weekend. I like playing it recently, at least, has felt like an entirely different experience. I feel like I had to have actually played this deck, but like, you know, the deck with this point, with playing like, obviously, you know, like the Ren and Six and the Teferi, kind of whatever at this point, I've really been enjoying some of the small changes that they've made. We talked about them before, but things like the Deuce, I think, has been really, really strong for me. I actually played against a version of this deck that was playing Manatize. I didn't play that myself. It was pretty cool, pretty fun.
The Manatize is infuriating.
God, it's so brutal. Well, it's just like, I'm not expecting really anything out of my opponent on turn one, and for it to be a Manatize that I'm like, are you boarding this out, or like, are you going to still keep this in? People just always keep it in, it feels like. That card was very good, but you know, there's a lot of other cards too, like different versions that I've seen. Like, I'm playing a version that has three Archon of Cruelty in the main, which I think is pretty stock. I think most people are doing that. And then I've got two Terastodons, one Elish Norn, Grand Cenobite, it. And, you know, I've been playing its other versions that, like, some have Elish Norn, Mother of Machines, which has been really cool. I think it's the only other, like, big monster I've played. I've only played two Mirrors so far in, like, the three leagues, I think, but, you know, I have been enjoying the deck. The deck is pretty good, very strong. The Surveil Lands, which we talked about before, like, end up being really, really nice here, where, like, my only one drops in, you know, the version I'm playing are Lightning Bolt, Bell Pierce, and Prismatic Ending. So, like, there's a lot of situations where, like, I don't really have a plan to, you know, do anything on turn one besides maybe they'll play something, they probably won't, and then I just get to, like, you know, get a Surveil land and look at my top card and make that a little better and draw into more action. Like, that is a very good Surveil deck. I don't think there's necessarily too many bad Surveil decks, but this one definitely is a good one.
I know I've said this before, but I love the Surveil land.
They're really good. I mean, the one thing I've been kind of noticing, at least with this deck, is because the colors are so intensive. Like, the Surveil lands that you want, some, like, in the version that I'm playing, at least right now, like, they don't really jive with what you need. So, like, I'm playing with the Elegant Parlor, and I'm playing with the Raucous Theater. I think that's the red-black one.
Correct.
And, like, I've been happy with the Parlor. The Parlor is fine, but, like, I do not want to search for the red-black land under almost any circumstance. So I think I'm going to switch some of these around where they do kind of line up where, like, I'm not going to do this on turn one, but I want this on turn two anyways. So, like, I'm probably going to make the theater into a Blood Crypt. And then I think I'm going to make one of the Steam Vents into a Thundering Falls. That's kind of what I'm leaning towards right now. It's either that or making the, changing it around so that the red-green land, the one that, so I can actually cast Ren and Six off of Surveil Land. I think I would make that, like, the commercial district, make that one. But I have to figure that out. I still haven't quite gotten there yet. Also, I'm only playing 3 Dwarven Mines in my version, which I feel like I just want the 4th one, but maybe that it's messing with things that I don't quite understand, so I'm not sure about that.
Dwarven Mine is good. I have won a lot of games by attacking people with Dwarven Mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like it's a very easy card to, like, put back when you're mulliganing, so, like, I don't mind having an extra one or having more frequency, and, like, drawing them naturally in a lot of spots is, like, very comforting to know. It's, like, I don't have to worry about finding a fetch land or, like, resolving this, you know, through some weird ability. Like, I don't have to worry about any weird effects. I just know this is my 4th land. I will be getting a dwarf, and if I put them tapped out, they are dead. Like, that's very comforting to know.
Going back to what you said, the Surveil lands are really tricky to figure out where they fit in your mana when you're a multicolor deck. I'm having a similar issue playing like the Cascade Leyline Beans deck I was talking about last week in Legacy. Mm-hmm. Obviously the format's a little bit different, but trying to figure out just like, okay, I like need these colors, but like, what am I okay with being tapped versus what am I not? Mm-hmm. It's very challenging, and I can imagine it only gets worse in your deck, which just like, I've played my fair share of creativity, and the mana is just like, it's very intense because it's like, okay, I want red green on turn 2 to play Ren and Six, but then I want like red blue white on 2 for Teferi, but everything has to be a mountain. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you end up taking a lot of damage from shocks. Like, you can obviously, you know, just put your lands into play tapped, but like being a turn off is not ideal versus a lot of these decks. I mean, the format's just so fast. So the idea of playing a Ren and Six on turn 2 versus turn 3 is like just very appealing. Same thing with like the, what is that card called? The Saga Mirrorbreaker. Fable the Mirrorbreaker, yeah. Like, that's a card where, like, obviously, like, the card is just, like, value incarnate and kind of, like, whatever I do, I'm going to be happy with. But, like, I really would rather this come into play on turn 3 and me be able to, like, you know, have the ability to activate my reflection, you know, as quickly as possible. You know, especially with this deck with all these big monsters with great come-into-play effects and great attack effects, like, I would rather have them available as possible. Or even just as another target, right? Like, just, it's another thing I can creativity away. So, like, having it be delayed by a turn and losing me value that way, not being able to actually get the filter and the draw off of the Fable to actually, you know, find the creativity that I need the following turn, like, there's a lot of reasons why I do want to play on curve, and I don't want to wait any more than I have to, but I actually lost a game today where, because of my sequencing, I ended up like having the wrong land, so I couldn't creativity or couldn't leyline binding for 2 or for 1. I had to do it for 2, which means I couldn't pay the ward on. Oh, I guess this is definitely the wrong deck. I'm thinking the deck from yesterday. I've been playing a lot of this deck. Oh my gosh, what is this called? Again, this is my favorite game where we try to guess magic cards that I feel like I should know. The 2-mana artifact with ward. Gets a +1/+1 counter every time you cast an artifact.
Patchwork Automaton?
Patchwork Automaton, yeah. So I couldn't target that, and that ended up losing me the game because I just didn't have... I had 3 mana available, not 2 mana, but because I didn't fetch a black source, I just didn't have the mana for it. I lost a game today where same thing happened, where I was willing to pay creativity for 2, but I didn't actually have the ability to pay for the Voldaren Hexcatcher ability. So, like, I wanted to get rid of a Lord of Atlantis, but they would have to sack 2 creatures if I had 1 more mana, but they only had to sack 1, so they just kept Lord of Atlantis, and I died, so... Yeah, it's interesting. It's definitely interesting. It's a fun challenge, though. I'm not used to playing decks like this. if I'm playing Modern, I usually am playing, like, you know, Shadow, or playing a Murktide list. So, like, to have a deck that I'm just like, and I will tap out on my turn and pass the turn, moving on. Like, I've actually been getting matches done in a timely fashion, which is a nice change of pace.
Yes. Definitely a very big tap-out deck, which is funny because it also plays Reprieve and Manatife.
It does, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, like, the Deuce does, like, a similar thing, too, where it's like, I want to hold this up. Which, and I was actually thinking about that, too. I actually don't know how much better the Deuce is than the Crab token one.
Hard Evidence.
Hard Evidence. I obviously do like, I mean, I like the Deuce perfectly fine. I think the ability to put an artifact into play at instant speed, which is, like, super hard for your opponents to deal with. They're doing a lot of cute things where they're like, you know, I'm going to hold up this Fatal Push. I'm going to hold up this, you know, Bowmaster so I can, you know, tag one of the dwarf tokens. Like, that's all fine. But then you put it down an artifact at instant speed and they're like, oh, I can't Fatal Push that. Ooh, jeez. I got to play against the, you know, Mono Black. My brain, let's like call it Mono Black Scam. I think too much Legacy. The Mono Black, like, Karn.
You know, Coffers. Deck.
Yeah.
You're and really not doing it with the card names today.
I'm not. No, I've been home for 5 days in a row. It's too long for me. I got 2 days to recharge. Now my battery is overfried. It's crazy. No, the Karn deck, yeah, they ended up playing that. And again, even though, you know, I can't activate my clue, it doesn't matter. It's still material. Like, you can have 3 mana up. The first time I cast it in that match, I think they just had Dismember to kill my Fable. I was like, oh, that's unfortunate. Okay, that's not a big deal. And then I was like, oh, I'm just going to put this artifact into play. You can't kill this nerd. And they could have plussed their Karn to kill it, but, like, they were just being greedy and wanted to, you know, search for a Stone Brain. It's like, that's not good enough. Yeah, pretty sweet. Pretty sweet. Very much enjoying that deck. I feel like we have been seeing a lot of, like, really neat decks kind of popping out over the past couple weeks. Yeah, past, like, month or so. I think we're still in the good old Thion Leyline phase of the format, but there definitely are some other really cool things going on.
Yeah, like yesterday, one of the challenges was won by an Asmo deck, and yes, we see Asmo from time to time, but this is a little bit of a different take than at least I've seen. It was a more aggressive slant. So it was red-green, and it was playing Teething Wormlet, which, any chance you know the text off the top of your head?
Ooh, I do, I think. It is a single green for a 1/1 worm. I feel like worm or serpent.
It's a worm.
It's a worm, okay. It has, I was going to say landfall, but it's not landfall, it's like artifact fall. Whenever an artifact comes into play, you scry one, and if it's the first time that it's resolved this turn, you put a 1/1 counter on it.
Very close. It is gain a life, not scry one.
Ah, okay. If it was scry one, I guess that'd probably be too good, wouldn't it?
I don't know. Maybe. It's also has death touch if you have 3 or more artifacts.
That's pretty nice.
I feel like it has to be kind of good against all these blue Zoo decks that are popping up. But anyways, yeah, so it's 4 of all the creatures. Asmo, Ragavan, Wormlet, Inti, love that card, Tarmogoyf, and Daredevil. And then it's playing Lightning Bolts, of course, and another newish card, Breakout.
Okay. I like that card a lot.
So for those who don't know, it's red and green for a sorcery. You look at the top 6 cards of your library, you get to pick reveal a creature card, put it in your hand. If it had a mana value 2 or less, you put it into play and it gains haste. Then the rest go on the bottom in a random order. So, notably, it hits every creature in your deck other than Oval Chase Daredevil, which you don't really want to put into play anyways. So, well, depending on the board state, sometimes yeah. You do.
I've died to that card, yeah.
Yeah, I've definitely killed people with it. And I've definitely just been like, okay, Oval Chase Daredevil, you're on blocking duty for the rest of this game. But yeah, so that's pretty sweet. I think, you know, your opponent not seeing, like, your hasty NT coming in could definitely, or like your hasty Tarmogoyf, wave, that could be pretty big. I really like the looks of this deck. That's not super surprising. I tend to like most Hasmo decks. It's also a Jagatha deck, and that elk has a special place in my heart as well. So, cool deck. Really excited to see this take down a challenge. It looks like some players have picked it up since then. Notably, Namorsquats also got 9th place in one of the challenges yesterday playing the deck. And Nam is a known lover of good decks. So, therefore, I'm just assuming that this deck is good. Definitely can't possibly be just that he was curious. Has to be good. Confirmed. Has to be good.
Yeah. I'm always surprised, like, seeing some of these cards, like, pop out into the format where I'm like, I did not expect this one to be making waves in a significant format. And I like the fact that we are seeing cards from, from Brothers War, I believe.
Correct.
The Wormland, yeah. Like, that's cool that that's seeing play. Inti obviously is, like, a monster in multiple formats at this point. I actually got to play, this is my weekly plug for CEDH. I got to play Inti in CEDH, and just being able to just discard cards to that was insane, like, just incidentally. So, I got to cast this and then play Gamble, which meant I did not lose. So, it was very nice. I don't know. There's a lot of good things here. So, I like Breakout. Breakout was one of those cards that I think kind of popped up on people's radar when we started looking at Murder at Karloff Manor, and I wasn't exactly sure what kind of deck would actually want to play this, but this definitely seems like a good fit. Like, being able to obviously put in, like, a Ragavan or an Inti or Tarmogoyf, yes, it's great, but, like, even putting in an Asmo is, like, real gross.
Yeah, having another way to cheat Asmo into play is, I think, very good. And it just kind of took the place of Finale in the deck, which is interesting. And, you know, we'll see if that sticks around, but it's definitely easier on the mana than Finale is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this deck is definitely, I mean, the mana in general is just really, really tight. Like, you still get to play 4 of the Sagas. They have room for Bazeju, which, again, the Bazeju and Sakuzen play really, really well with Inti as well, just being a way to discard. And obviously, if you're discarding with those effects, that means you're discarding for Asmo as well, which is pretty sweet. Like, I would not imagine, like, I'll Bazeju your Tron land, oh, here's an Asmo. Like, but that, it works. It's discarding a card, so go get it. Like, there's a lot of really cool, tight interactions here. With a really low curve, I mean, besides the Daredevils at 4 mana, and I guess the Gigantha as your companion, like, you are just playing a bunch of, like, 1 and 2 drops, which is... I said, this actually would be a really good deck for Dark Confidant, if you... obviously, Oval Chase is not exactly what you want to hit, but, like, if we're keeping the curve this low, I do think Dark Confidant would be cool here.
Yeah, but then you have to go into 3-color mana base. Like, I love Dark Confidant, but... not worth it.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe.
I mean, you could just play a black-red Asmo deck with Confidant. And then the other thing that's nice is you're generating a million food, so you probably can create the life to spare.
Well, I want to... If you're playing the Wormlet, right, you're getting life from that. So, like...
That's true.
It's actually some more incentive to be doing that, especially if you get the... I mean, I think once you get the cookbook... Oval Chase engine online, like, you're just gaining life left and right. Like, that is, yeah, that seems very free.
Okay, I'd be willing to try it out. Not because I think it's correct, but I really like Dark Confidant.
I thought, like, I really like gaining one life at a time. I was like, yeah, it's really nice too. Dark Confidant is very sweet, and, like, that's very much one of those cards that, like, I think Tarmogoyf obviously has seen a tumble, and Young Pyromancer is on vacation somewhere. I'm assuming in, like, I don't know. I feel like the Caribbean. I don't know why. But we have just not seen Dark Confidant at all. I'm assuming Dark Confidant went back to school and was, like, becoming, like, a more trustworthy politician.
Yeah, the card just does not exist. It's really sad. Mm-hmm. If you, like, search it on Goldfish, it's just, like, all Commander decklist for.
How which is also wild. It's like, I don't think I'd ever play that in Commander.
And then also Vintage, but I'm pretty sure that's largely, like, one person.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen it in Legacy, just in, like green-black depth decks and things like that, but, like, it's not a lot. Not as much as it used to be. That, I don't want to scare anybody, but there was a point in time where, like, we would put, like, four Liliana of the Veils into a deck, along with, like, four Tarmogoyfs and, like, four Dark Confidants and four Lightning Bolts, and we called that a deck.
I wouldn't do that.
I, no, me either. I don't think I ever have done that, but, you know, it has been done. People have done it before, so. I don't think this is the thing that brings back Dark Confidant, but I do think you would need something like this, where you're gaining some kind of amount of incidental life. I guess, actually, to add to this, you're also playing Shadow Spear, too, so, like, you have the potential to be gaining a large amount of life. So, man, it actually seems a lot less ridiculous. I feel like the more we kind of expound on it.
Yeah. Speaking of Shadow Spear, just really cool kind of side tangent on just something I want to make sure people know about Shadow Spear. I think everybody knows the, you know, equip, give something +1/+1, lifelink, trample. It's awesome. Great. Don't forget now in this day and age that it also has that line of text where you can remove hexproof and indestructible from your opponent's stuff. I got to Swords to Plowshares so many Cyan of Dracos through Leyline of the Guild Pact this weekend. That is a huge thing. I just want to make sure the listeners are aware.
I think that's a very, very good thing to add. Yeah, and also, like, you know, turning off indestructible means that you can actually possess you the One Ring, which is very relevant.
That's actually sick. I hadn't thought about that part.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's that, though. Obviously, I haven't played this deck before. The only thing I've done that has been cool with this is I've been able to, what's it called? Possess you a Cauldron Complete, which is nice. Like, a lot of these things are like, it's an invincible monster. I will have to figure out a way around this. And, like, for Shadow Spirit to be like, oh, no, dude, I got you. Just target it. I got you. Pay one more mana. Like, that's a ward I'm willing to pay.
Shadow Spear's cool.
Great card. So, yeah, definitely something to try out. I'll add this to my list of cards, or list of decks to play. I've actually been working down my queue, which is good. I've got, I think, two more I need to play from last week, but this definitely seems like something I would enjoy playing, so.
I'm curious, so what is in your queue?
Let me go over. Let me download this first before I forget it. I think at this point I'm down to, like, legacy decks. I've been going through a lot of the modern stuff, trying to work that down. There's a couple Beams decks that I was, like, not, just, like, wasn't in the mood. Like, as silly as that sounds, like, there are definitely points where I'm like, I know I need to play this just for, like, you know, science and for knowledge and for the show, but, like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to be that person. So I've got Green White Depths. We talked about that last week, so that was something that I wanted to check out. We've got the Lamplight Phoenix deck from last week as well. I don't know if I actually will go back around to playing that one, just because, like, I've heard more people talk about it. I saw Spike played it. Spike, I think, had a good run. I think he went, like, 9-1 on it. But I've seen some other people not do nearly as well. So,
Did you see what happened on the, like, I can't think of what it's called, the Moto Masters
stream last week? I didn't, I don't think. What happened?
Somebody was playing the deck. I can't think of her name. Luna Love, I think her name is.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was playing the deck, and she, I guess, hadn't played it before, and tried to combo off and milled herself out, and then realized she didn't actually have enough to kill her opponent.
Okay. Yeah, that's annoying.
And it was just like, which you may remember, I even, like, did the math while we were talking about it. I was like, this doesn't seem like it would work out often enough. Mm-hmm. And then to just, like an hour later, I watched it fail. Not an hour later, it was the next day, but, like,
still.
Just like, okay, well, I guess I was right.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Yeah, I'm, like, not as excited about the deck as I think some other people are, so I might just leave that one sitting there. There is, like, the mono-black scam list in Modern that I wanted to play. I think we talked about what's last week. That has, like, the Sunken Citadel, which hopefully was a cool add. But, I mean, it's a pretty basic list. But it looked like it was doing things that were more good in this format, so that is something I did want to try. Doesn't really seem like my cup of tea, but maybe it's worthwhile. Delver I've been playing a ton of, and I think that's it. I think everything else I've gotten through. Again, I've just been playing, I've been playing a lot of Red-Green, I guess not Red-Green, Teemer, Delver Online, so I was iterating on that, but, like, that's another thing I'm, like, still not, like, super in love with, just as a deck. I know that it's been doing well in Legacy, but I just, like, I don't see the power there. I don't see the appeal over playing just Grixis. So I'm in the middle of a league with Teemer Delver. I'm currently 0-2. The games have not been close. I feel like I've gotten bodied on every metric. But the deck, you know, it's a fun time. It's a good time, and I'm sure I'll finish it eventually. It's been live for only a couple, like, 4 days now, but I'm sure I'll finish it soon. I'm having so much fun there.
I mean, you could just drop at any point.
You say that, and I can.
Magic's a game. You're only supposed to play it if you're going to have fun.
Yeah, but, like, part of my online success has so far has been, like, kind of eking out those points so that I don't have to put money in, which I know you I don't you're in the same boat. I don't think you've put money into Modo for, like, years at this point, right?
Why would I put money into Modo?
Yeah, agreed. Yeah,
it's free to play.
It's free to play, exactly. Yeah, the only thing I've put money in for has been, like, Eternal Weekends Online and things like that. But I don't think I've actually paid for anything. I'm going to say it's 2024, so I'm going to say it's since, like, 2018, if I had to make a guess. And I'd like to keep it that way for as long as humanly possible.
Yeah, I feel like you could drop one. But so is that your whole queue?
That's my whole queue. Yeah, I've worked through most of my decks. I've been very good or very, very bad depending on perspective.
So for me, I want to try in Modern. I want to try the Blue Zoo deck because people keep winning with it, and I am curious. I do not like playing Murktide, so I'm not sure how I feel about this deck, because, again, it just looks very similar to me. But I'm definitely kind of curious to see how it plays out. The thought of playing, like, Territorial Kavu and Counterspell in the same deck just feels weird to me, but I'm seeing the success people are having, so I kind of want to try this Asmo deck and a different Asmo deck, but Modern's kind of on the back burner for me. So who knows when I'll get to these three. I want to try out Rescaminator.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we all know the deck's good. I just haven't played it, and I really haven't played it against it that much either. So I kind of want to see it more in action. I want to see if I like it, how it feels playing that deck. I want to try out the different versions. Like, I like, in concept, the Esper builds better than Blue-Black, even though it's less popular. I know some people like the red black list. Our friend Brendan has been working on a bug version where he gets to play Uro. I do like me some Uro, and Entombing for that card does seem good. So I don't know. I kind of want to try all those things out. And then I have some real spice that I want to try out. That I'm just gonna leave it at that, because I think I'm going to play it at Sargis event that's coming up. I'm not sure. I'm very torn. Part of me wants to go in and try to win, and part of me is just, like, have the most fun in the room. And currently I'm leaning towards have the most fun in the room. And I want to keep working on the Beans deck I've been playing and try to hammer down the mana. I played another league. It went, you know, well enough. Definitely still like the deck a lot. I made minor changes to the mana and the response where I was like, oh, I'm so glad I did this. And then other parts where I was like, oh my god, what an idiot I am. Why haven't I included this stuff? So, I just, you know, want to get that to a point where I'm happy with it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm still not sure. I did. We talked about this before, like right before we started recording. I got a message from Sarge reminding me that I need to sign up for the event still. So I will get to that. But yeah, I'm trying to figure out what I want to play for Sarge's too. And like, part of my deal was I know we can. I think it's proxy friendly.
It is proxy friendly. I likely will not be proxying, but that's just because I own most of the cards I like to play. You know, I am an idiot because I spent money to order cards for the spice that I might play exactly once ever, and it didn't dawn on me I could just proxy it.
Could just proxy it, yeah. Yeah. And I'm debating because I have an idea for a deck. Again, like for the sake of having a good time, I think this would be fun. For me having a good time, it probably won't be fun. But I think I'm just gonna play the Sultai, or sorry, Sultai. I've been playing Sultai a lot. But no, I think I'm just gonna play the Teemer Delver deck I have sleeved up, even though I don't really like the deck. But I'm more interested in just like hanging out. And again, I like the feel of actually playing my own card. So I might just do that.
That is understandable. Yeah, I mean, whatever happens. I also have some Legacy this weekend, so I might see something there and be like, oh, that looks sick, I'm playing that. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, I think my weekend has opened up a little bit, at least. My wife's birthday is tomorrow, which I guess as of recording, or I guess release, will be yesterday. So if you're listening to this on the day it came out. We are like doing some birthday stuff around here. But like we did most of the birthday stuff this week, and one of the issues I was running into is like we're gonna go out and do like a nice child free evening, which I'm excited for. Hopefully she's excited for too. If she's not excited for, that's gonna be a whole another set of issues. But we are planning on doing that. But I was planning on doing it this weekend, but. It's Easter. No one's here. My parents normally will watch the girls overnight, which is great. But that needs to be something with them, and they're apparently on a cruise. I think they get back next week. I'm not going to do it next weekend, which is also Punt City 3, which is a whole other thing, too. So I'm trying to plan out some stuff, but we will. I'm excited to hopefully play some more events coming up. I know there's a lot of other things besides, you know, Punt City and our, you know, friend Sarge's. Again, it's Spells of the Squirrel?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, there's a bunch of other events coming up, I know, somewhat soon. Mostly for us, I guess for us collectively, it's a lot of Legacy, there's a lot of CEDH, and obviously there's still whatever the PPTQ or RCQ season is, which is standard? Is it still standard?
No, standard's done. Now we're in Pioneer. So I think I have one on the calendar. That's why I looked. They just like weren't scheduled yet. Okay. Just like fine, but I also want to know when they are. We're now under SCG leadership, so the stores get to run 3 a season. So I am hoping beyond hope that means there will be more Sunday events so that I have a better shot. You know, I was thinking about the RCQ system recently, and I was just like, because, like, you know, this weekend, you know, I top forward that event, and like I said, not a big event or anything, but, like, it felt good. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about, like, oh man, look at the success I had. I just had, like, this top four, and then I had, like, the SDG finals, and you know, you were giving me a hard time because I'd been, like, down on my results, and you were like, didn't you just do well a few months ago? And I just, like, I realized I think I hate the RCQ system so much just because, like, when you top 8, it doesn't feel like a good result.
Yeah, it feels like failure. I mean, anything that's not getting an invite to the RC, which you've been trying to do for the past 6, 7, 8 weeks, feels like you have failed, and That sucks. That is a really upsetting way to play Magic. Like, this is obviously a small diatribe. The number of students that I will grade their tests, and I'm like, oh, you got an 85. Good job. And they're like, oh, man, that's not good. And I'm like, if you knew 85% of all the things in the world about giraffes, I know 85% of everything about giraffes, from what they eat to what time they go to sleep to how long it takes them to have children. I know 85% of all that stuff. People would be like, that's really good. Really creepy. Giraffes are not that interesting. But 85% is a lot to know. So, like, you know, it's the way that magic is currently constructed, where, like, and I don't think we actually talked about this. Like, the SCG ended up going, what, like, 6-2? And then not making top 16. And, like, 6-2 is a good record. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Like, 6-2 is great. If you told me I was going to win 75% of my matches from here on out, I'd be very happy. But 6-2 isn't actually good enough in terms of, in this one context, where it doesn't get me into the top 16, doesn't get me into anything in particular. Like, I really do wish there were more ways to rationalize success, rather than, you know, you weren't the top 8 people, you didn't win your last 2 rounds, you didn't, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It feels bad. And I think it's an inherent part of the system to have these points where you can be successful but also not find success. But it just feels bad, especially when it's something that you're devoting so much time and energy into. Me doing it for one day kind of sucks, but it's not the end of the world. But, like, you know, you chasing around an invite for months on end to not get it, despite having numbers of top 8s and, you know, having friends convert and things like that. Like, that still feels bad, that you feel bad about it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It is unfortunate, but... And I'm sure this is probably a thought I've already had at some point, but I am glad to think about it, because I think going into this upcoming season, it hopefully keeps me feeling better, so that I can try to remember to, like, you know, celebrate those top 8s or whatever. You know, it's not the result I want, obviously, and it's not like I'm going to get to the top 8 and be like, yeah, I did it. Now I don't care what happens. Right. Like, you know, going to hopefully get myself to a point again where I'm just, like, leaving and I'm like, well, this is unfortunate, but, like, I still did good today and I'm going to do good again.
Yeah, the downside of a lot of things, I think, with Magic is that you get so caught up in the target that, like, you, when you don't find success, it all feels like a waste, which sucks. Like, I mean, like, the part of the reason why you and I like playing Paper Magic so much is because the people are the best part. And, you know, watching friends actually play their matches and find success, being able to talk through lines and decision points, like, that is amazing in itself. But I'm glad you got a good mindset going into the next season, though. That I think it's a very healthy way to kind of go forward.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how long it lasts playing Pioneer.
Yes, agreed.
It might be, you know, I might play one event and be like, this format sucks, and just be off it, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I have, it's funny, because I have Phoenix, like, I have it in a box. It hasn't moved in, let's see, it's April 2024, so it hasn't moved in about 18 months. It's still in a red deck box in my dresser, ready to go. I have the Sleight of Hands, which weren't legal last time I played it. I've got a playset that's ready to go, but, like, I've not even sleeved those up yet. That's how uninterested in playing Pioneer I have become. So, you know, have fun during this season. I wish you the best of luck, and, you know, hopefully you get that invite.
I will say, I think Pioneer might actually be the format where I have the highest win percentage.
I think so.
So it's funny that I, like, it's one of my least favorite. I think I've top 8ed, like, every non-RC event I've played in the format, but I'm just like, ugh.
Well, with that note, we should probably get out of here. Matthew, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at ExpeditionMap. This weekend, you can find me at Alternate Universes Wilmington playing, well, I don't know what I'm playing. Maybe Riskaminator.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some nonsense. Who knows? Where can people find you?
If you're interested in finding me online, I am at Depth. No, that's not right. So close. Let's try that again. If you want to find me online, I'm at Bad Luck Bandit. There we go. on Twitter. Again, we have links to all of our, all my personal stuff I have there. If you want to check out some of my deck list, which I've actually been picking up, which is, it's funny. I just randomly brew a bunch of ideas. So if you're following me on Moxfield, you can get some weird insights into the inner workings of my brain, including like a bunch of CDH decks, but a bunch of like weird concept legacy decks and ideas. But, so I don't know, check that out if you're interested in that. But of course, we do have our Twitter for the show. We are depth_podcast on Twitter as well. And again, we got our link tree there. So if you want to check out the cool things that we're doing, which we do a lot of cool things, I'd like to think. But again, shout out to our sponsors, Heavy Play and Magnolia Gaming. Definitely check them out. We've got codes that you can use to help support us and also give yourself a little bit of a break there, which is nice. And then also shout out to our patrons who continue to be the most excellent people that we see. You know, and again, if you guys have anything that you want to mention to us, please do. We always like having questions to answer or things like that. We like doing stuff, so the more stuff the better. Get out of here. See you next week.
See you next week.
Gavin Maya taps with green, the scene sees reclaim. Untap sack of flags, don't go seek the planes. Then tutor up the stage, so pull out your playbill. Darkness podcast starring Billy Mitchell and Michael Mapson on the microphone. Dripping in Mox diamonds, the collector of curtains up on act one of this magic show. Setting the forest so dense it looks decomposed. With red LeCrevy knights crush against death shadow. On the legendary lake covered in ice and snow. Underneath the surface lurks a lonely evil. An avatar so dark it could cause upheaval. The knight lunges forward, going for the kill. But Death Shadow's too tricky, it just won't sit still. It's stubborn denials compile a stack so thick. The bazooka bug emerges with Gurmag's angling. The knight takes a swing at the zombie fishes, but falls submerged for such a distance. Forsaken in the haze of the street wraith's fringes. Who wanna stuff her out, they don't seek forgiveness. Her final breath draws a deafening silence. It sounds so sinister, no one could describe it. It's like the subtle cracking of a turtle shell, or the surgical extraction of emerging hell. The shards of ice feel a force of vigor. The looming fear releases, growing bigger and bigger, until a demon's fingers linger toward the shadow of death. An all-consuming hush. The land goes swept, the night washes up, frozen on the ice. Dryad Arbor saw her out in the green sun's light. An expedition map suddenly unfurls, revealing Merit Lage has rearranged the world.